You are listening to the eReal Estate Coach Podcast, featuring RealTrends top 500 broker, Jim Remley. On this show, we interview interesting people in the real estate industry to help agents, broker owners, and team leaders accelerate their performance.
I am super stoked. We've got an incredible guest. I met her at a conference I did recently, and she blew me away on stage. She just crushed it. Everybody loved her message. And it wasn't specific to real estate either. It's just specific to brand building and really creating an amazing customer experience. It's Brittany Hodick, and she is with us today. She's an author. She's an entrepreneur. Incredible background. Brittany, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jim, for those very kind words. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So just for people that haven't maybe experienced you yet, I know everybody is going to because you're just blowing up right now, but kind of tell us a little bit about your background, how you got here.
So I got here totally by accident. I grew up always wanting to work in the music industry. I thought I was going to be a radio DJ or work at a record label. And I ended up doing both of those things. But what I found was that I was really, really drawn to this idea of customer experience. And in the music industry, what that looked like is, why do some artists blow up and others go away? What makes some artists have Taylor Swift and Beyonce level fandoms while others, you know, never really break through? So when I was in the music industry, I spent a lot of time honestly obsessing over this, like studying it, trying to look into the psychology, trying to look into the marketing, into the sales, and really figure out what it was. And so as I got deeper into that side of it, I went back to school. I got a master's degree in consumer behavior and marketing. I started working with all of these brands and looking across all different disciplines and industries. And what I kept finding again and again and again was, whether it was music or, you know, mortgage, something totally different, creating those engaged customers or fans was all about connecting your story to theirs. Like, what can you do to endear yourself into the lives and hearts and minds and memories of those people who you're hoping aren't just one-time customers, but come back again and again and again? How are you making your thing relevant to their life? So I started writing more and more about this and reading more and more about this, and ultimately, you know, sold my entertainment marketing agency that I had founded and grown to an eight-figure business because I was so passionate about talking to people about how they can create their own super fans, how they can take all of the same tools that the world's best and most famous entertainers have at their disposal and use it to create the loyal, dedicated customers who aren't going to just come back, but they're going to come back and tell their friends that they need to come too.
Wow. And I know you've spoken and you're speaking to some of the biggest companies in America, American Express and Disney and Walmart. I just looked at a little roster of your speaking gigs that you've done recently. And you're the author of Creating Superfans as well. But walk us through it from I'm in the real estate industry, from the real estate experience. You know, how do you build a brand that is going to relate to people's experiences? How does that look in a small scale?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to realize is that we're living in an experience economy. People no longer make decisions about just a product or a service. We are like long past that distinction between products and services. It's all blurred into one. And that category is experience. So if you're a realtor or you're a real estate broker owner, you need to be thinking about, what does it feel like to work with you? What does it feel like to have you as part of a team? And figuring out how to message that to your customers, but also your prospects. Because what we have a lot of times, particularly in real estate, is this commodity mindset. You have customers who, either because of their past experiences or because of their beliefs based on having never been a customer before, they just see a commodity. They're like, everything's the same. It doesn't matter. I'm going to pay the same 3% commission to anybody. I know I don't want to work with, like, you know, a fintech, so I'm going to just like pick a realtor's name out of a hat, right? What's the difference? Mm-hmm. So your job as a realtor or as a broker owner is to transform from a commodity to a category of one. You've got to show to that person even before they're a customer, why you are different, what your uniqueness is, what your differentiation is. And a lot of people try to differentiate themselves on like very commodity things like, oh, we have the most 5-star reviews, or we sell the most homes, or we've got the most agents. And, you know, from a customer standpoint, that's not always what you want, right? It's not always like, oh, bigger is better. So there's a lot of opportunity that exists in saying, I'm going to spend some time thinking about my uniqueness. I'm going to spend some time thinking about my differentiation and how I can talk about this superpower in a way that's going to really connect with the ideal prospects and customers that I want to serve.
I love it. And, you know, my wife and I are going to Boston for a couple of weeks, and we are looking, you know, what can we do while we're in Boston? It relates exactly to what you're talking about in the music industry. And, you know, Beyonce is there and Pink is there at the same time. And, you know, you look at it like a Beyonce ticket to going to see Beyonce's, you know, it's anywhere from like $2,000 to $20,000 now. And you're not buying just listening to the music, because you can do that on iPod, right? You're going for the experience of being in the auditorium, right? It's kind of the same thing. You're buying into that experience. And you said something at the seminar I attended with you, which you said, everything's experience and experience is everything, which is kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yes. So experience is everything, meaning it's the number one differentiator between you and everyone else. There's a stat that I used in that seminar that we were at, that 86% of people are willing to pay more for the exact same product or service if they know they're going to have a great experience. So for instance, think about, you know, where you go to get your haircut or your favorite restaurant. If you have a favorite, why is it your favorite? What is it that you're willing to pay more for? What are those extra touches? What are those things that make you feel great? And then reverse engineering that to your real estate practice. What are you doing to set yourself apart before, during, and after the client interaction? So before someone ever meets with you, how are you setting yourself apart in that first touch with them, whether it's in an open house, whether it's a phone call, whether it's through a flyer that you've sent? What are you doing to stand out, to say, hey, I am not like everyone else. This is who I am. And if you want to work with the person who's the absolute best at this, this is why you should choose me, because I'm the right fit for your family. So being able to think through those things, we forget sometimes to sell the way we buy. Like, think about what you like as a buyer. Guess what? All of your, you know, prospective buyers, like, they all like that stuff too. They all want that too. So that's what I mean when I say experience is everything, is everything is experience.
So this is interesting when we talk about, because agents can get very transactional. So can real estate agents and brokers, where, like you said, it's all about production. It's all about number of agents, or it's all about the, you know, the number of sides closed. But there is a thing where we want to scale our businesses, and you did the same thing. You scaled the business to 8 figures. How do you create still what feels like an individual customer experience at scale? How do you do that?
Oh, I love this question, Jim. Okay. So the way you do it is by deploying technology strategically. So winning in an experience economy is not all about being high tech, and it's not all about being high touch. It's that Goldilocks sweet spot in the middle of what are the things that you can automate, because it's easy to set it to happen, and your customer is not going to feel any less, you know, engaged because you've automated that. And by automating more and freeing up more time and delegating more and freeing up that time, you can focus on those high touch, high impact items. So, you know, you're right that so many people look at things as transactional. And if you want to get customers who are creating more customers for you, who are coming back, who are telling their friends, you've got to move far past transactional, even past relational, to experiential. What does it feel like to work with this person? What would I miss if they weren't in my life? And a lot of that happens after the sale, because, you know, think about a relationship that you're like, oh, this is a long-term relationship. This is great. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, like, where'd that person go? What happened? I thought they were going to be here. So many people peace out after closing, when in reality, after closing is where you have the opportunity to shine the most, because all of those things that that new home buyer is going to need, you know, people, you know, the best landscaper, you know, the best painters, you know, the best electricians and roofers and barbers and, you know, kindergarten teachers and all of those things. So to be able to continue to make yourself available as a resource is a huge value add for your community. And a lot of it can be automated. You can set up nurture sequences to say, you know, in December every year, I'm going to send people information about like the best gardeners they should be hiring in the spring, or I'm going to send people information about like winterizing their pipes, or, you know, in October, I'm going to tell people, here's what you need to start thinking about to like decorate your house for the holidays. And did you know that Home Depot has all of the wreaths 25% off, or like whatever it is, you can use technology to deliver those messages in mass and free up more of your time to like have those personal touch points that don't end at closing day.
What's interesting about realtors, I think, and is unique, is we are personal brands, kind of like a Michael Jordan-esque or like a Beyonce or something like that. Like we are the brand in a lot of ways, right? Different than like a product we're selling. We are the brand. How would you see that as being maybe of a different approach in like a product marketing and building an experience with a product versus personal marketing, building an experience with a person? Do you see some differences there? How would you approach
that? Yeah, well, you know, honestly, I would say particularly in real estate, one of the biggest differences is you need to work harder to stay top of mind afterwards. Because like, let's say somebody, we've all seen the stats that, you know, the vast majority of people say that they'll work with their realtor again, and then they don't, right? Why not? Well, because so much time has gone by. Maybe you forget their name. Maybe you forget who they are. If you're never hearing from them, or the only time you're hearing from them is a postcard being like, hey, do you have any neighbors whose houses I can sell yet? Like, you're not going to feel that engaged. But if it's someone who every time they're showing up with value, they're giving you, you know, information that's helpful. They're being, you know, just like a great neighbor, a great member of the community, helping you with things, saying, hey, don't forget like the rodeo's next week. Did you get your tickets yet? Like, you know, here's all the fun stuff for kids, or, oh, wanted to make sure you knew there's like a big trunk or treat happening at the park this weekend and everybody's invited. Showing up to add those things makes people realize that you're helpful and that you care about your relationship with them. With products, oftentimes it's harder to check back in with your customers when you're not like ready for that next purchase cycle, right? Because it's like, how's the chair doing? Hope it's still like hanging in there. You know, you need more chairs. You need a pillow for your chair. So I would say there are unique challenges, but also unique opportunities when you're talking about a personal brand. And for anybody listening who was like cringed at the idea of like, I'm not a personal brand, you 100% are. Every single person has and is a personal brand. It's not even like up for discussion anymore. The minute you get online, you are creating a digital representation of yourself. The only question is, are you controlling it or is someone else controlling it? So all of the things that we're talking about, it is so critical to be aware of. You know, sometimes I have people, when I say like, when's the last time you Googled yourself, and they cringe and they're like, I would never Google myself. And I'm like, why not? Like, if you were a restaurant owner, would you be like, I would never taste my food? Like, it's ridiculous that you're not proactively staying on top of your online reputation, because it is just the digitization of who you are.
Interesting. Now, when you look at a fan, like a traditional fan, and you've now got the book Creating Super Fans, what's the difference between a super fan and just a regular fan?
So in a word, amplification. So in my book, I talk a lot about fans as somebody who has an affinity for your product. They are going to be very loyal. They're going to spend their money with you. They, in fact, identify with a lot of the things that you do in a way that feels very natural to them. They're a fan. But once they begin to create more fans, that amplification is what, in my opinion, qualifies them as a super fan, because now it's not just affinity, it's advocacy. They're out there saying, you should know about this too. You should care about this too. And one of the principles that I talk about in the book is this idea that in an experience economy, everybody is an influencer, every single person. It doesn't matter if you've got 10 followers on social media or 10 million followers on social media. There are people in your life, both online and off, who will make a decision based solely on what you say. If you say this new movie is amazing, go see it. They'll see it. If you say this new restaurant is terrible, don't go there. They won't go there. It's not about using that as the first piece of information and then doing additional research. It's like, I trust this person. So I'm going to inherently believe and act on what they say. So that is the difference between a fan and a super fan, is someone who becomes an enthusiastic advocate when they have the opportunity to speak up and say, oh, did you say you're moving? You've got to meet my realtor. Or, oh, you're thinking about selling your house? You got to talk to, you know, my girl or my gal. That is a super fan. The people who have, you know, transcended that affinity level and are now like squarely in the advocacy stage of how they see their relationship with you.
I have a really interesting question. I think it's interesting. When you have somebody that has not had a good experience with your brand and you have this like, uh-oh moment, like how do you swing the pendulum back and kind of recapture them? Is this an opportunity? Is it a problem? How do you look at that?
I love this question. I agree with you. This is a very interesting question. I have an entire section in my book about it. So in my book, Creating Superfans, I talk about how, you know, I worked in the music industry and how you can make anything feel different. And I wanted to be really conscious about making this book not feel like a business book. So it's very fun. It's written in full color. And every section, whether it's a chapter or like a major section of a chapter, is named after a song. And the song that I use for this part is Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away, the Motley Crue song. Yeah. So I talk about something that's called the service recovery paradox. And the service recovery paradox, this is not my term, this is something that's been studied and written about for decades. And what the service recovery paradox says and has shown again and again when it's been studied by academics and researchers is that when someone has a negative experience with your brand and you turn it around, they will actually become more likely to be an advocate and more likely to spend more money and come back more often than if nothing had ever gone wrong in the first place. Because for the most part, people don't expect you to be perfect. There are exceptions. If you're like a pilot or a brain surgeon, yeah, perfection is like pretty much what everyone has like signed up for. But for most of us, people expect us to work hard and do the best we can. And when something goes wrong, to help them fix it, to be able to say, I'm sorry, this went sideways. Here's what we're going to do to correct it. And so when you do that, when you have that service recovery, you have the opportunity for people to really feel like they know you more and got to see you at a deeper level than if they hadn't had to have, you know, those calls or meetings or emails or whatever with you about how you were going to like get things back on track.
So along those lines, which I think is amazing, I didn't know that, but along those lines, how do you find that's important for us to chase people to give us recommendations and reviews online? Because it's such a big part of, especially a realtor's existence. Or do you, should it be more organic and just they should have such a great experience that they should want to give you that recommendation or review?
So I'm gonna cheat and say both and. Okay. You should always act from a place of knowing that every customer is an influencer. You should never expect someone to leave a review or make a recommendation, but you should also never be afraid to ask for it. And one of the things that I preach, especially when I'm talking to realtors, is to say that you should start planting the seeds of that you're going to be asking for a review, you're going to be asking for you know, referrals, long before it's actually that time. And the reason is, other than you want people to know it's important to you, many people simply don't realize how important that is. Like if you've never worked at a sales job or you've never worked in a commission position where you're having to find your audience and like create your next sales, you just don't know how important that is. Mm-hmm. So I always say, don't be afraid to ask your customers for referrals. Don't be afraid to tell them that you're going to, you know, be asking them to write a review at the end, but don't expect it either. And also don't come from a place of feeling entitled and don't try to get it before you've earned it. Like nothing is more annoying to me when somebody on like their first day of getting your listing is like, cool, like who else in your neighborhood can you tell about me? Like, let me get all those things. And it's like, I don't even know you yet. Like now I feel very used. Now I feel like a means to an end. So you never want your customers to feel like a commodity. You never want them to feel like just another customer, just another listing, just another number. So once you have proven that you love them and you've earned some of that goodwill for them to love you back, then you can start asking for those things. But the reality is, you know, nobody's going to give you a referral simply because you ask for it. They're going to do it because you have earned it by doing a good job.
I read an article years ago and they turned it into a book. You know, it only takes 1,000 true fans. I'm sure you're fully aware of that. And I love the concept that, you know, for anybody that's in a kind of a small business setting, that having 1,000 true fans can create an amazing income. Is there a number for you that you feel like is for a small business owner that we're shooting for, that I need 1,000, not audience members, but true fans? Is there a number for you, or is it, have you thought that through?
You know, I think the number is probably different in every industry, based on, you know, the volume of the sale, the timeline of the sale, like what's the life cycle of somebody coming back. But like, just to take real estate, for example, if you have 100 people who have truly loved their experience with you, you're going to have a pretty great business, because what's the stat? People buy and sell homes every like 7 years or something. So let's say you have 100 people who've been either super pleased with the job you did for them, or who have been super pleased in some other capacity with you for them to like go out on a limb and be your first 100 customers. That means that you're going to have 11 or 12 of them every year who are ready to buy and sell their homes. And if all of them know 10 people, then, you know, that's another, you know, several dozen people every year who are going to be ready to buy or sell their home. So it's not, it doesn't have to be 1,000, because when you're talking about making 3 or 6% of, you know, a 6 or 7 or 8 figure number, you know, the quantities get pretty big really fast. And the one thing I'll say too, is like real estate is one of those areas where agents have a lot working against them, because so many people say they're a real estate agent. Just like, you know, I'm a professional speaker. Tons of people say they're a professional speaker, when in reality, some of them make like 1% of their income from speaking, and they do all of these other things too. But I'm somebody who's like, no, like that is all I do. I speak and I write. This is my business. This is my livelihood. This is, you know, why when you book me, you're going to see a very different result than somebody who does this with like 3% of their time while they're doing all of these other things. So realtors oftentimes have that barrier of entry of showcasing that they are serious, that this is their main thing. You know, no shade to people who are doing real estate on the side, but it's just a very different business model. And I think a very different level of expectation of what the customer can expect to get. So making sure that, you know, when you're figuring out how many people it is that you need to really build the kind of business you want, you've answered the questions about what kind of business you do want, how quickly you want to grow. Is this something you're committed to doing 40, 50, 60 hours a week? Or is this something you want to do like one house, you know, every month that you sell to like, you know, have some extra spending or vacation money?
So when you mentioned a category of one, and that's such a great concept. When we talk about a category of one for real estate agents, I think it's very easy for agents to say like, I sell all kinds of real estate. But do you think it's better for an agent to be specifically niched into an area of the market that, hey, I'm the waterfront person, or I'm the golf course person, or I'm a very specific niche? Or are you relating it more to, no, it's more about the experience that people are having with you that's more important? Or is it a combination of both?
You know, it's a combination of both, but it's actually a combination of three things. It's a combination of both of the things that you mentioned. And then also, what is the type of customer you most love serving? And of course, as someone in real estate, you're going to be ready to serve anyone. You're going to be willing to serve anyone, but who gives you the most joy? Do you love working with young families? Do you love working with empty nesters? Do you love working with people who are relocating from another state? And I think that like Venn diagram of those three things, like what do you love? Who do you love working with? And like, where is there a big opportunity in your market? Like those things together are what I mean when I say category of one. And really a category of one is like you occupy a space in someone's mind to where no matter who is like, oh, I got a real estate degree. those customers aren't going to work with somebody else. So like my realtor, Susie, who I love and adore, I call her my fairy godmother. Mm-hmm. Not only did she sell me my home, but she sold my mother-in-law her home. She sold several of my friends their homes. And I have people all the time who I used to work with in the music industry who are like, I'm in the real estate business now. Like, if you know people moving from New York or LA, like tell them to work with me when I come to Nashville. And I always say, like, look, I'm going to be straight up honest with you. There's nothing you can do to become my favorite realtor, because I have a realtor who's so incredible and amazing. She went above and beyond at every single step. I still talk to her all the time. Like, I still go to parties, like at her house that she throws. Like, you're not going to overturn her, right? Like, it would take like my brother having to be in real estate. And even then I would probably be like, do I want to send this person to Susie or my brother? So that's what I mean when I say category of one. You occupy a space in your customer's mind that no one is going to be able to, you know, overthrow you from.
Gotcha. So let me get into technology for a second. I don't want to stay a long time here, but just, we know social media has been a big dominant player in building brands, but, and I do want to touch on that for a second, but do you see AI coming in and impacting this whole relationship, you know, when AI agents and things like coming into the world, is that an opportunity or a threat to brand builders out there?
I would say it is already being incredibly disruptive, and it is both a threat and an opportunity. I do not believe that AI is going to replace real estate agents, but I know that real estate agents who embrace AI will replace the ones who do not. Mm. And that is because using AI already allows you to scale your time so much. Anyone can go in right now to the free version of ChatGPT and create an entire year's worth of newsletter content. And the smart people know that they're not going to use it exactly as it is. They're going to tweak it and work with it and change it to be more in their voice. They're going to leverage those tools that exist. And if you look at any industry, as technology has been disruptive, what it has done is displaced most of the people in the meaty middle, right? Like the bottom and the middle. But if you are a top performer, you are not going to be replaced by AI or any other kind of technology or digital agent for the next few decades, at least, right? Because when someone is buying the most expensive and the most important purchase of their life, they don't want to work with AI. They don't want to work with a robot. They want to work with a human who they can like touch and talk to and who they've met in real life, because it is a big, huge decision that you don't want to entrust to anybody else. So I would say you're not in any jeopardy of losing your position if you are better than a robot. So that is your call to action if you're not better than AI. And if you're somebody who is like not really good at what you do, then chances are not only do you not feel very fulfilled by it and might want to look for something else anyway, but you are probably going to be in trouble.
So let's flip the coin to social media, which has been here for, you know, it feels like forever, but only a couple of decades, really. Not even that. But with social media, it's a place we all have to be. Some agents are going to be better at it than others. I read a book called Who Not How, which I think is a really kind of insightful way of looking at this. But, you know, do you think it's a good idea for agents that they all have to be on social media, or that they hire somebody to do the social media for them? Or what's your take on social media in regards to brand building?
So my take is that everybody should have a very distinctive perspective and plan and stick with that. You should not ever try to be someone you are not. However, you should make yourself accessible to where your customers and prospective customers are. So, you know, being on TikTok or being on Instagram or being on Facebook doesn't mean you have to spend like hours every day or hours every week creating new content. It means you need to have a page that has your information so that people can see your face, engage with your listings, get your phone number, get your email address, all of that in a space where they are. Because what you don't want to have happen is for someone to ask in Facebook or Instagram or wherever for a recommendation and someone try to tag you in and not be able to find you. So you want to make sure that you're accessible everywhere, but that doesn't mean you have to be creating content somewhere. So ask yourself, what are your goals? Is your goal to really like find new opportunities constantly through social media by creating content that's going to get you, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of new followers? If so, that is a very different model and a very different content plan than somebody who just says, I want to make sure that people can find me everywhere they are and engage with me with the various inboxes. And I also want to create lists on social media so that I'll see content from my clients so that I can follow up and comment on the things that are happening in their life. So that when someone has a new grandkid or when somebody's daughter like wins the state choir tournament, like I can comment and say, oh my gosh, congratulations, that's amazing. Not so that I can just feel like I have like this big megaphone and can like spam everybody with listing posts all the time.
I love it. So when you're talking about kind of relating your brand to experience, when you're talking about social media, what does that look like? Are you showing yourself interacting with clients? Are you delivering a message? I mean, what does that look like? If you can give us a little short snippet.
Yeah. So again, I think the answer is going to be different for everyone. I always say, you know, the key to success in social media is hidden right there in the word number one, social. You've got to be social. You can't just like post and ghost. Don't just like set stuff up and never be there to engage with your audience. And then the second part, media. If you were going to run your own media channel, what would it be? Like if you had a TV network or you had a newspaper, what's the type of content that you would share? What are your interests? What are your hobbies? What do you love? What do you not love? That's the point of view that it's worth developing. And when you create a personal brand, when you have your sense of uniqueness, it's if you love gardening, great, post about gardening, because guess what? A whole lot of those people you're selling houses to are going to have gardens. If you love DIY stuff, if you love painting, if you love arts and crafts, like find a way to incorporate your passions into your posts so that people feel like they're getting to know you beyond just what it is that you did for them. But that answer is going to be different for everyone. And that, you know, cadence is going to be different for everyone. Like some people might have one like amazing new thing that they reveal on social media every single month. Other people might have multiple projects a day they're doing based on the mediums within which they're working and the way that they want to connect with their fans. But the number one tip that I can give you is just make sure that what you're posting adds value to your followers. Are you earning the right to continue to be in their feeds based on what you share?
I love it. Oh, Brittany, you've given us so many nuggets. I wish when I was listening to you, I think I took about 10 pages of notes. So you are so good. Really, really powerful stuff. Right to the point, get right to the meat of the matter. I know everybody can go out and buy your book, Creating Superfans. Where else can people find you?
You can find me at BrittanyHodak.com.
Okay. And the book.
And I'm on all your favorite social networks is at Brittany Hodak. I got very lucky when I married my husband, my maiden name was Jones. So it all of a sudden was much easier to get handles when I became Brittany Hodak. So I'm just at Brittany Hodak pretty much everywhere.
Very, very unique names help. So thank you so much for being on the show, Brittany. You've just given us a bunch of gems. Thank you. And we wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. I really appreciate it.
If you liked this program, please subscribe and leave a review. And if you would like to explore our coaching platform, please check out www.erealestatecoach.com for 2 free weeks of coaching. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the eRealEstate Coach Podcast.